Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday, California Governor Gavin Newsom said more needs to be done to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. So far, 335 people in California have tested positive for the coronavirus. 11,700 are self-monitoring, and tragically, 6 people have died. These numbers are expected to be much higher in the coming weeks, according to public health experts and the Centers for Disease Control. Governor Newsom is asking people 65 and over and those with health issues to self-isolate. And I know there are a lot of questions around this. In fact, we're already getting emails. So if you have any questions, you can give us a call now, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Governor Newsom also ordered California bars, nightclubs, wineries, and brew pubs to close temporarily. Restaurants are being asked to cut down capacity by 50%. And they're also making sure that everyone knows to have some social distance between you and other people. And of course, these closures are happening now around the world. Most of Governor Gavin Newsom's comments were focused on what needs to be done to protect the most vulnerable communities. This is also happening in many other states, especially New York, where so many of the students there rely on free and reduced lunches, and also they wash their clothes at home. So there's so many moving parts to all of this. Joining us with the latest are two guests. Laurel Rosenthal covers California politics for Cal Matters, an independent news site focusing on issues around California. Hi, Laurel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Dr. Michelle Coe is Assistant Professor of Public Health at the University of California at Davis. She researches the connections between policy, healthcare, and social inequality. Hi, Dr. Coe. Thanks for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Great to have both of you. Laurel, I want to start off with you. I watched the press conference yesterday, and a lot of people have questions around Governor Newsom's ask for people 65 and over and those with health issues to self-isolate. Can you elaborate on this? What does this mean exactly?
Yeah, the governor is asking people who are most at risk for the most severe version of this disease, of the most severe impact of this disease, to stay home. And the idea is to minimize their risk, minimize their exposure, and keep them away from the germs that are spreading this virus. There were a lot of questions about how people are going to get basics like food if they are, you know, isolated at home. And the governor said there are protocols in place, although it was really vague on the specifics. He talked about that the state has emergency plans, that it deploys in times of wildfire and earthquake and other disasters where there are social services and that can, you know, bring food to people who need it in their homes. And we anticipate more specifics rolling out from the governor's office today, tomorrow, and throughout the week.
We're getting a lot of basic questions from people like, can I go outside to get fresh air? What are the rules around that?
That might be a better question for your doctor on the line to answer. I can tell you what I'm hearing from the politicians, but I think it might be more helpful for the public to hear from a medical professional.
Okay. Dr. Coe, are you with us?
Yes, okay, I am. And I can summarize sort of what I know from the public health field, but certainly I will say that my expertise is more on systems and policy as opposed to in infection control, but generally it's a moving target, but my understanding so far is our guidelines are, you know, yes, you can go out and about. The recommendations are to keep sort of 6 to 10 feet from other people. To our best of our knowledge, it's primarily spread by droplets, meaning viruses that is in sort of water droplets from sneezing and coughing and so on. So you're more likely to get it if you're in, you know, very close proximity to somebody who say cough. but not so much that it's floating in the air. The next danger is really more that it then collects on all our surfaces, and as well as through other bodily fluids. So I think the another thought that people have started to promote in terms of distancing is perhaps you can pick one family and that you might know, and that is your mutual support, but you stick to a very, very close circle, and then you kind of agree that you will not be in contact with too many other people.
Right. The other thing is Governor Newsom also announced that 13 task forces are being put together to focus on things like ensuring people get food and water and basic necessities. And we got an email from Joe. In fact, several listeners have a very similar email. Joe writes, "I am 70 with existing health conditions and limited income. I self-isolated even before the governor's directive because I know if I get coronavirus, I have a good chance of dying. My only major reason for going out is getting groceries. And here I have a conundrum. Is there a service where I can order needed groceries for a small or no delivery fee? I'm over 65 with existing health conditions and limited income." Laurel, do you want to take that one first?
So I don't, I would suggest calling a local food bank or a local Meals on Wheels, wherever the listener is based, and see if there is any recommendations there. That would be my starting point. I would also reach out to any kind of like senior center that may be in their city or county or other resource for senior citizens. The only delivery services that I know of are the sort of commercial services that, you know, Amazon delivers groceries and, you know, DoorDash and things like that. But my guess is that my understanding is that there is a social services network that is getting activated. And so I would start by calling there, again, the senior center, the senior resource line, the food bank in your city or county.
All right. Dr. Koh, anything to add?
Yes. Similarly, other resources would be each region has an area agency on aging. It sounds funny, but AAA, as well as the AARP. And this, I recognize, might be a little bit unusual for older folks, though I think it's actually becoming more common, is Facebook and also Nextdoor. What we see in our area are generally community mobilizing between people who are offering to pick up groceries and run errands for older adults, and likewise those sending out requests. Similarly, our local food bank is moving to a food delivery model, and they're requesting volunteers. So, and actually, I think even as of this week, they're moving to that. So I think there are going to be options to the extent that they are sufficient. I'm not sure, but that's where I would start.
And Laurel, I'm concerned about people who do not have internet access.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that's online. And it's even, that is even hard to navigate because you have to go to this site for food for children and this site for daycare. And I'm wondering, Laurel, is the state thinking about putting together maybe a hotline so people can call in and ask these questions? Because that is really needed at this time.
I haven't heard about that, but like I said, I expect that we're going to continue getting announcements from, you know, from all levels of government over every day.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that we will hear more and more about that, and
okay. And we have another other questions. Mary writes in, "I am over 65. I live alone in a 30-unit apartment far from family." So these are very basic questions, and if either of you can ask them, but they're really important. How do I take care of my laundry? There are machines in the building, but no coin changers. Is it safe to go to the bank? And what about holding money? Dr. Koh, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's similar to everything else that, yes, go to the bank, make your visit short, be sure that you wash your hands well as soon as you handle money.
Right. And the same for the groceries. People say, and in fact, I know that some delivery companies are not staying at the door. They're dropping off the deliveries, so there's no face-to-face interaction.
Yep. And then there are, but again, as you mentioned, there's a real issue with internet access, because certainly with some stores, you can order up front, and then it's a quick drive, you know, show up, pick up, take off.
Right.
People might want to consider, you know, buying, if they can, to buy a lot of non-perishable food right now, and if, you know, alter your diet if it means not eating as much fresh food, but, you know, get a case of canned soup and, you know, canned foods and things you can put in your freezer if you can stock up now and not go to the store as often, even if it means eating a little bit less fresh food than you'd normally would prefer, it's better than you know, getting a potentially fatal illness.
Laurel, what are you hearing from politicians, or do you think that we'll be getting more information in the coming days? Because I'm thinking about people like our listener, Mary, who is over 65. She says she's immune suppressed and she lives alone, far from family. So, you know, for those of us who have family around, I can drive around and drop things off to my loved ones. But for people who don't have family and maybe don't have internet access, do you have any idea at this point what the state government or local governments are planning to do to reach them?
Like I said, I believe there is a plan being deployed at the local level by the social service agencies in each county or each region. So if people want more information, they should call those services and see what's available in their city or county. I think the big picture that we all need to keep in mind is that the medical professionals are very concerned about the trajectory of this illness, the spread of this illness, and if it spreads really fast, really badly, that there may not be enough capacity in the healthcare system to take care of everyone who becomes sick. So all of these measures, the point of all of these measures of asking people to stay home, of closing restaurants, of closing bars, and, you know, asking restaurants to reduce their capacity, all of these things are designed to slow the spread of this illness so that we don't reach a point where we have more very sick people than we have hospital beds. That is the crisis that the government is trying to avoid. If we get to that point, you know, that's what's happening in Italy right now, and it's very, very dangerous. So all of these measures that are anxiety producing and confusing and very strange for all of us to absorb, the point of all of this different way of being is to slow the spread of the disease so we don't get to the point where there are so many people in critical stages of medical, in need of critical medical care, and there's not enough care for them to get.
Right. Exactly. Thank you for that, Laurel. Dr. Koh, this is unprecedented. As someone who works in public health with a focus on social inequality, what are your thoughts about the best way government officials should go about reaching our most vulnerable populations?
It's a good question. I was thinking about analogy for this for a day or two of, I think about like maybe an old tire or an old ball that has a bunch of cracks, and then you don't know it so well, and then you blow it up and suddenly you see them all start to emerge at once, and it gets very tricky. I think there's also sort of two pieces that I'm thinking about in terms of the vulnerabilities we have that are created by sort of the social inequities. And I think we've talked a bit about, as you said, vulnerable seniors and things that I think there are a number of local policies that are actually being proposed at the federal level in the House that are important protections. So certainly, I think shoring up the needs of our most vulnerable populations is really important because, just as Laurel mentioned, we're trying very hard to slow down the spread. Not that we can prevent as much of it, but we really need to make sure that health system can take care of it. But then there's also people are more vulnerable when all these things happen, when if we're in an economic slowdown and people may be losing their jobs or losing their wages and are already ongoing issues that we know about in the state in terms of food insecurity, housing insecurity are potentially getting worse. So I think part of it is the public health response. Part of it is the economic protections, having really quick access to the measures that we saw in the recession of paid leave, of unemployment insurance, of worker protections, of delaying for quite a while evictions, of so certainly things like that in terms of making sure that our social inequities at the moment don't make people's risk to infection and disease greater. So that's one piece. And in terms of on the policy side of caring for people who are perhaps, the most vulnerable, getting back to sort of what we talked about with social isolation for our seniors and our people with chronic conditions and disabilities, there are things that we can do to have a combined public health healthcare focus. So both Meals on Wheels as well as our community paramedics can become increasingly important avenues for continuing to make checks on people who are home and isolated. I think people forget that, or may not realize that Meals on Wheels is not just a meal delivery service, but an important way of monitoring people and folks at home. So allowing communities to put more resources into those programs. And similarly, there has been increasing interest in having EMTs perform the same kinds of functions in terms of public health tracking and checking on vulnerable older adults. So I think local communities looking into our community paramedicine models is another way to go. The governor also did not provide a lot of details, and I think we will want to know very much what is going to be done for people who really have a higher level of needs of care, whether it's children under California Children's Services and other folks with disabilities, making sure that there is support for their caregivers so they can continue to provide those services. That is another one where it will probably be a number of things, raising wages within our own Medi-Cal in-home supportive services program is important.
And Dr. Koh, let me just jump in there quickly. Sure. Thank you for all of that, because we have to let Laurel go.
Yes, sorry.
Laurel, no, that's okay. It's okay. There's so much here to talk about.
Yeah,
Laurel,
exactly.
two quick questions before we let you go. Can you talk about the relationship between Governor Gavin Newsom and the Trump administration at this time? And what role will the federal government play when it comes to all of these issues we're discussing?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Newsom campaigned as the anti-Trump, leader of the resistance. Obviously, he's a Democrat, and he's been very vocal in his dislike for, pretty much almost everything coming out of the Trump administration in terms of immigration policy, healthcare, environment, civil rights, reproductive care. I mean, it's just been an endless stream of opposition from Gavin Newsom about all things Trump. And yet, he has not been critical of the president or the Trump administration in terms of this disaster. Even as he's been, calling for more test kits and more help, it's been in a very collegial tone. And I asked him about that the other day because it does seem so out of character. And he said, I am trying to solve problems, not make problems. And I'm willing to put aside our differences to, try to help the people of California. That was his answer. So Newsom is definitely letting other people in the United States sort of bat at the Trump administration response to this virus. And he is playing it very nice in terms of trying to make sure that California gets whatever resources the state can from the federal government. And that one critical issue is these test kits. You know, I'm sure people have heard that the test kits have been, there's not been enough of them. They've been sort of incomplete, missing critical chemical ingredients. Some of them have given faulty results. So there really is a need for more testing. And then, you know, depending on where things go with this, you know, we may see more, some kind of, you know, bailout or economic stimulus or something from the federal government. So Newsom's approach seems to be just sort of make nice and hope that that will help the state.
Well, thank you so much for your work, Laurel, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you. I hope everyone is staying healthy, and please tune in to calmatters.org for more information.
Thank you, Laurel. Laurel Rosenthal covers California politics for CalMatters. They do a great job of focusing on state issues. Sticking with us for the rest of the hour is Dr. Michelle Coe, Assistant Professor of Public Health at the University of California, Davis. And today we're talking about all of the new information that we learned over the weekend. Now, California is the first state in the country that is asking people 65 or older or people with health issues to self-isolate. But we also got announcements from many governors around the country that bars and in some cases restaurants will be closed. There's now plans out there how to help the homeless and the most vulnerable. And so if you have any questions, I know there's so many, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's go to a few callers before break. Let's start with Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about their, we're constantly being told take certain precautions, wash our hands, to use hand sanitizer, and yet there's no hand sanitizer available anywhere. And I'm wondering, in addition to trying to get more test kits out there, why aren't they putting resources into manufacturing hand sanitizer and giving it out everywhere all the time?
Yeah, this is a good question. Hand sanitizer shortages. This is also a problem, Dr. Coe, at various nonprofits that hand out hand sanitizer to families that are low income. Do you have any insights on this for us?
I would not specifically on hand sanitizer, but I would say in general, when the testing is simply the most prominent signal of the lack of overall preparation, meaning there was not earlier on federal investment in everything from hand sanitizer to mask production for healthcare workers. I think we see that in other countries there was sort of forethought and how to put those investments forward and ramp up whatever they could produce domestically.
Well, I've been looking for some articles just now. The Wall Street Journal has a piece about EO Products, which is based in the Bay Area. They're ramping up, but they cannot keep up. The Times has a piece called What Should You Do When It Is Sold Out? People are trying to ramp up, but like Dr. Coe said, the government just did not plan. The Washington Post has a piece about how inmates are manufacturing hand sanitizer. But Dr. Coe, I mean, this is really incredible, this Washington Post headline, but will they be allowed to use it? Some reporters were saying that at Rikers in New York, forget hand sanitizer, they didn't even have access to soap.
Right. I mean, I think it's a longstanding issue of both the lack of protections for inmates as well as the way in which they've been used as a labor force, including in the state of California. So it, unfortunately, it is coming out, and it's important that it's come out and publicized widely because I'm not sure people realize this, but inmates are part of our wildfire fighting force as well. So I think this is not, unfortunately, not surprising, this nature of both using inmate labor and then not denying them protections from infection.
Right. right. Well, we will stay on this, but according to major media outlets, companies are just having a really hard time keeping up with demand. But we will stay on this. Thank you. Do you have another thought before we go to break?
Oh, just that there are guidelines, as you had mentioned, there are guidelines you can find on the internet of ways to make your own disinfecting and sanitizing solutions.
Right.
And that might be your best bet.
Yeah. In fact, the New York Times also, this is really important. Do not assume that all antibacterial wipes will do the job. So make sure, but again, we're giving people information about where to go online. And I'm just really thinking about people who don't have internet access.
That's why I'm worried about it. So I think mainly, well, let's say it on the radio, you should look for wipes that have alcohol or ammonia.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And other wipes will not be sufficient. And you can make a home bleach solution, and I want to say it's a couple tablespoons of bleach to a quarter of water.
All right. Well, thank you again for the call, Mark. We're going to take a quick break. Today, we're joined by Dr. Michelle Coe, Assistant Professor of Public Health at UC Davis. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we're joined by Dr. Michelle Coe, Assistant Professor of Public Health at UC Davis. And today, we're taking your questions. We're also talking about what state, local, and federal governments need to do to ensure that our most vulnerable populations are protected at this time. We have a number of callers on the line. We have a lot of people writing in saying, well, soap is much better than sanitizer. But when people are out and about, out on the street, for example, out in a park, they have to have soap and water, and it's hard to do that out in public. So sanitizer is the next best thing. And there are a lot of DIY sanitizers online, but you have to make sure there's alcohol in them. So thank you again for that call. Let's go to another call, Dorothy in San Francisco. Hi, Dorothy. Thanks for holding.
Thank you for taking my call. Like a couple of your other callers, I am also over 65. On limited income. My question is that I have not heard anything about how to be safe or at least less at risk on public transportation. A lot of us are dependent on taking the bus, and we do have, even if we try to isolate ourselves as best we can, we do have appointments and such. So I was wondering if your guest might have some comments on that and some advice. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dr. Coe?
It's a difficult question. I think that it's very hard. We know there are a number of studies that show, for example, wearing a face mask is not necessarily shown to be effective. That being said, I can't say that there's a huge body of evidence that I'm aware of for people, particularly with immune suppression or chronic conditions, that maybe you should. I think one of the challenges of balancing that message is the supply. I think, obviously, as we've always said, washing your hands frequently. I would ask your listeners, for everyone else who does not absolutely have to go out, when you think about it, that if you are using public transportation and you don't need to, that you're raising the risk for people like our caller who really do need it. And so this is probably one of the most effective things at this moment, is to try to stay off it if you can, because people do still really depend on the public transportation systems. So that's actually my message for the others. And in addition, sort of washing your hands frequently. And before, after you get on, and everywhere, handling tickets if you need to.
Yeah, well, it's a good question and a tough one right now. But Dorothy, thank you for calling in. And we'll continue to ask questions around this. What is the city doing to ensure that buses and trains stay as clean as possible? Thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Alice in San Francisco. Hi, Alice.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. And thank you. I hope to contribute to your fun drive as well after this.
Thank you.
I think one aspect that needs to be brought to attention is the mental effects on people 65 and older of being confined to barracks for, I think they're talking about 8 weeks. Loneliness would be intensified. You'd have a lack of exercise, which we know is important for people at any age. Why would a walk in the park or a bike ride not be part of a normal existence and allowable. I don't understand that part of the governor's advice.
Thank you, Ellis. Dr. Koh, again, people are saying go out on a walk, but just ensure that you have distance between you and others.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think if you can, you know, earlier in the morning, you know, times that are less crowded, perhaps, would be another way to do it. But absolutely, I think that the mental effects are going to be tough. I think isolation is, you know, irrespective of what we're going through right now, is already tough. I do think it is, and getting out when possible. And similarly, again, it's another request I really put out to all of the listeners you have who are not over 65, or not, you know, really under as strong recommendations for isolation, is to phone calls. Call your loved ones and people you know on the phone. Mm-hmm. Check in on them. See how they're doing, even just to say hello.
Yeah, and every, I'm hoping, actually I shouldn't say this because of budget cuts. If we had an adequate budget, we have the warm line in San Francisco. It's a non-emergency resource for anyone seeking emotional support. And I am taking care of a loved one right now, so I completely understand isolation and what it's like to just have that connection. And I want to give out that phone number. It's 855-845-7415. And this is so important. I'm so glad you called about this, Alice, because, you know, unfortunately, the resources out there are for people with a computer, but there are many. In fact, I just found a website this morning. It's called Here Are 450 Ivy League Courses You Can Take Online Right Now for Free. There's also, if you go to YouTube, there's a lot of free stretching and free yoga classes, lots of talks there. I mean, these are small things, but they're important because we're all going to be inside for many hours. We'll put these links at yourcallradio.org. But again, for people who do not have internet access, there is a warm line in case you don't have family. And this is for people who have a non-emergency. If they just want some support and have a chat, the number is 855-845-7415, and we will be compiling a list of all of these resources. In fact, we had a listener last week who said, can you please put this all on one website? I'm still waiting for government to do that. Right now, I just don't see it, but we definitely will put all these resources on a website. So thank you again. Dr. Koh, anything else to add there? I think in the coming days, we're going to learn a lot more about, you know, subsidized services or free services for people to access.
Yes. I think one of the things that I am also concerned about that I cannot see happening, I'm not sure quickly, one of the challenges certainly with this is not only getting the information out there and centralizing, but certainly from the local government and state government level. What I'm also concerned about is making sure that all of this information is available in different languages.
Right.
Having sort of language, linguistically and culturally appropriate messaging is really important right now. You know, when we were talking about getting back to who is the most vulnerable, for people who have a capacity, and I think both on the government and nonprofit organization side, to reach out and make sure that you are providing information in ways that reach many communities in our state where English is not the first language. So those are, I think about that all across the way, whether it's an area agency on aging. One thing that came to mind was when the governor said, okay, we're going to move forward with this new initiative with Verily, and having sort of a question screening option for people who can try to do it, as we've talked about earlier, do you or do you not have internet access to use this? Another thought I had, is it going to be in the languages for people to use? And then are their algorithms going to be appropriately tailored to the diversity of the state? So those are things that I would think I do want sort of state, local governments, and partnerships to really think about.
Right. Well, thank you again for that call. Today, we are taking your phone calls. We're talking about the announcements made by Governor Newsom yesterday. I mean, governors across the country are asking bars and restaurants to shut down. They're asking people not to, walk in close proximity. And this really happened because, unfortunately, either the word didn't get out or people just didn't really take it to heart. There were a lot of bars in San Francisco and across the country over the weekend that were jammed packed with people. And this just really can't happen. We need to flatten the curve. We need to all, like Laurel, our first guest said, take responsibility for those who have compromised immune systems and those who are older. And again, yesterday, Governor Newsom became the first governor in the state to ask people over 65 and those with compromised immune systems to self-isolate. That does not mean that you cannot go and get your groceries or go on a walk, but it does mean try to stay inside as much as possible. And when you are out, try to have that self-isolation 6 feet between you and another person. And it's just really for the safety of all of us. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Dr. Michelle Koh, Assistant Professor of Public Health at the University of California, Davis. Dr. Koh, let's talk a little bit about how the state and the federal government are going to help families in need. I mean, I think one thing that this is doing is on our show, we talk about social justice and inequality, but this is now reaching the highest levels of the cable shows where, they talk about who's up and who's down. Well, now they have to talk about the fact that so many children rely on school for their food. So many children rely on school to clean their clothing. I mean, this is now being exposed for everyone to see. So can we talk first about how school districts and so many good people are doing what they can to ensure that kids get the food that they need?
So I think as you may have seen in the governor's announcement that they're still working through trying to develop guidance for school districts because there's been a real unevenness in how much the school districts have put forward plans and thoughtfulness and when they close. And, there's a list of needs that need to still be paid attention to. Because, as he mentioned, 60% on average of children in the California public school system qualify for free or reduced lunch, and in some cases, 80%. So school districts are working through figuring out how can they still continue to provide meals. Fortunately, the federal government, the USDA, did give a waiver so schools could continue to distribute food even if they're closed. So that was important. And then thinking through not only how they can provide the meals, but similarly, as we're saying with Meals on Wheels, can they also distribute them? Is that an option? Figuring out ways for students to get access to not only lunch, often breakfast, and then there are some school districts where they're really hoping to provide families with a longer sort of supply of groceries. So that those are things that need to be really planned out before they shut down the school. And similarly, childcare arrangements, can there be options for childcare that are still provided on site but spread out? Are there ways to figure out who, if they absolutely can't stay home, how they provide those resources? Because, we have so many people who still must work in these times. They cannot work from home. Certainly all of our children of healthcare workers, as well as, sanitation workers and, emergency response and our food systems.
Dr. Koh, again, this just speaks to how many people are in need and the major changes that we really need in this country. According to CBS, I'm just reading a piece right now, so many school districts are trying to ensure that kids have food. Just in Oakland, 71% of students, which is almost 3 out of every 4, are on free or reduced price meals. You've been tweeting about what's happening at the college level. And according to UC Berkeley, across the UC system, 44% of undergrads, 26% of graduate students say that they are food insecure.
Yes. I think that's something that has been not fully appreciated as well is that our college students, it intersects with our housing costs, it intersects with the lower levels of income for people all across the state. So students are coming from families that don't have income that can really support them in college. Some of our, many of our students are in fact in college but still supporting their own families. And then they arrive at the UC or CCU and they don't have enough food, enough money to pay for their basic needs once they're paying for going to school. Food insecurity, housing insecurity on our campuses is a problem. I worry about that going forward because a number of them are going to also see lower wages or lose their jobs with, you know, the economy and the necessary social distancing. So it's something we are concerned about a lot. I think that's why our own chancellor, for example, chose to keep the campus open because we know there are places our students may not have a place to go, and they really do need still the food services, and working on how to make them as safe as possible is very much on my mind.
Right, because some students don't have housing other than their school housing.
Correct.
Right. Correct. You know, Dr. Koh, the other thing I've been thinking about, and I've seen teachers, and thank you teachers out there, I mean all frontline workers, but teachers have posted, I'm really concerned because for some kids, school is their safe place. Correct. Being at home is not always a safe place. And we know that tensions are high, even for the most privileged people, saying, how am I going to deal with kids at home for 2 weeks? But what about the homes where they're already struggling to make ends meet?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think this goes back to hoping that the state comes up with guidance for how school districts can, as I mentioned earlier, maintain a level of, for lack of a better, other child support services to keep going and hope that we can. I think the other concern I have is as this goes on longer, that there's also going to be greater inequities in education that kids receive. You know, frankly, like my own children, they can stay home with me and we can figure out what they're going to do school-wise. But there are many children in this state where their parents are going to struggle with finding them a safe place to be or the children a place to be, as well as the weeks go on, really disrupting to their own education. Similarly, there was a discussion that school districts should be encouraged to find distance learning, but it's not clear yet how that's going to be happening. And again, back to the inequities in internet access, how that's going to work.
Right. Well, we're going to stay on top of this and continue to ask officials. I've got emails into all of these officials, and this is all just kind of happening in real time.
Right.
Joining us today is Dr. Michelle Koh, Assistant Professor of Public Health at UC Davis. She focuses on the connections between policy, healthcare, and social inequality. If you have any questions specifically on these issues, we've got just a couple more minutes, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And before we get back to calls, Dr. Koh, is there anything else you'd like to put out there when it comes to inequality and what people really should be thinking about at this time as Congress, local state governments are, you know, in some places they're really ramming through legislation. I mean, we've got moratoriums on evictions in San Francisco and New York and other cities are, thinking about this. So they're going to ram through some of these policies pretty quickly. So now's the time to really make your voice heard.
So several policies that come to mind. One of the things that really needs to be protected at the federal level is the administration has proposed a number of cuts to SNAP benefits, which, you know, we know of as CalFresh, including increasing work requirements in order to qualify. And clearly in these circumstances and prior to this, it was already estimated 700,000 people would be kicked off because of that. And that includes also children's eligibility for free lunch. So I think at the federal level, what people can do certainly is calling your representatives and making it clear that a number of these safety net protections need to be protected, and in fact, we need to put more money into them. It's hard to say. I think there's that. There is a number of proposals and policies that we've talked about. Is paid leave is really making unemployment insurance easy to report and collect, which was what we saw right in 2009 with the recession. So, again, asking your legislators to support worker protections. What else would there be? I mean, there were cuts to, the administration has consistently proposed cuts to housing and urban development for community block grants. And again, really trying to increase support for those grants so that people can get emergency rental assistance would be very important. I think on the healthcare side, just to get to what I'm normally thinking about as well, is we worry a lot about having not only enough facilities to treat a potential coming surge in COVID-19 cases, but having the workforce to staff it. We have not for a long time had enough physicians and nurses in the Central Valley, in the Inland Empire, and, you know, far reaches. So an immediate need for changing up and making available our workforce is changing our scope of practice laws within California so nurse practitioners can practice at the top of their license. This is something we see in other states, really expanding the authority for nurse practitioners will help a lot with our primary care shortage as more and more people as they get ill are going to need to seek care. So that's one thing that we can do at the state.
Dr. Koh, I just also want to give a shout out to the nurses and the doctors and everyone, the people cleaning the hospitals. We just got an email from a nurse who said it is crazy out here, long hours with a lack of resources and adequate support. She says the trend looks to be quite bleak from the ground, with predictions from epidemiologists that we're just 2 weeks behind Italy with too few, too late restrictions to prevent community transmission. And again, Dr. Koh, this is why people need to self-isolate as much as possible. Hearing right here, we just got this from a nurse just now.
Yes. Another thing we need to do is really, the state has done efforts certainly to require insurance to coverage COVID-19 testing and treatments. Another thing that would really help is ensuring that there is payment for video visits. I'm hearing as well from colleagues that it really varies across your health system, and being able to do a video visit goes a long way towards keeping people from having to go to the doctor, particularly our older folks who have mild illness, and then allowing space for those who are serious illness to go.
Well, Dr. Koh, unfortunately, we're out of time. But
no, that's okay. Yeah.
No, I thank you so much for all of your work. We would love to have you back. And please take good care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Dr. Michelle Koh is Assistant Professor of Public Health at UC Davis. And thank you so much for joining us. Please check our website for more information with all the resources we discussed today, yourcallradio.org. Thank you. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.